Chapter 9. 30 minutes later, Pitt rolled the Daimler into his parking stall in front of the tall, solar-glassed building that housed Pneuma headquarters. He signed in at the security desk and took the elevator to the 10th floor. When the doors opened, he stepped into a vast electronic maze, comprising the communications and information network of the Marine Agency. Hiram Yeager looked up from behind a horseshoe-shaped desk, whose surface lay unseen beneath a jungle of computer hardware, and smiled. "Hello, Dirk. All dressed up and no place to go?" "The party's hostess decided I was persona non grata and made me walk the plank." "Anybody I know?" It was Pitt's turn to smile. He looked down at Yeager. The computer wizard was a throwback to the hippie days of the early 70s. He wore his blonde hair long and tied in a ponytail. His beard was untrimmed and kinky with uncontrolled curls. And his standard uniform for work and play was Levi jacket and pants stuffed into scruffy cowboy boots. Pitt said, "I can't picture you and Jesse LeBaron traveling in the same social circles." Yeager gave out a low whistle. "You got booted from a Jesse LeBaron bash? Man, you're some kind of hero to the downtrodden. Are you in the mood for an excavation?" "On her?" "On him." "Her husband? The one who's missing?" "Raymond LeBaron." "Another moonlight operation?" "Whatever you want to call it." "Dirk," Yeager said, peering over the rims of his granny glasses, "you are a nosy bastard, but I love you just the same. I'm hired to build a world-class computer network and amass an archive on marine science and history. But every time I belch, you turn up, wanting to use my creation for shady purposes. Why do I go along? Okay, I'll tell you why. Larceny flows faster in my veins than yours. Now, how deep do you want me to dig?" "To the bottom of his past. Where he came from. What was the money base for his empire?" "Raymond LeBaron was pretty secretive about his private life. He may have covered his trail." "I realize that, but you've pulled skeletons out of the closet before." Yeager nodded thoughtfully. "Yes, the Bougainville shipping family a few months ago. A neat little caper, if I do say so." "One more thing. Lay it on me. A ship called the Cyclops. Could you pull her history for me?" "No sweat. Anything else?" "That should do it," Pitt answered. Yeager stared at him. "What's going down this time, old friend? I can't believe you're going after the LeBarons because you were dumped at a society party. Take me, I've been thrown out of the worst sleaze joints in town, and I just accept it." Pitt laughed. "No revenge, I'm just curious. Jesse LeBaron said something that struck me odd about her husband's disappearance. I read about it in the Washington Post. There was a paragraph mentioning you as the hero of the hour, saving LeBaron's blimp with your rope and palm tree trick. So what's the catch?" "She claimed that her husband wasn't among the dead I found inside the control cabin." Yeager paused, his eyes uncomprehending. "Doesn't make sense. If old man LeBaron flew off in that gas bag, it stands to reason he'd still be inside when it turned up." "Not according to the bereaved wife." "Think she's got an angle, insurance or financial?" "Maybe, maybe not. But there is a chance that because the mystery occurred over water, Pneuma will be called in to assist in the investigation. And we'll already be on first base." "Something like that." "Where does the Cyclops fit in the picture?" "She told me LeBaron was looking for it when he vanished." Yeager rose from his chair. "All right, then, let's get off the mark. While I design a search program, you study what we have on the ship in our data files." He led Pitt into a small viewing theater with a large monitor mounted on the far wall and motioned for him to sit behind a console containing a computer keyboard. Then he leaned over Pitt and pressed a series of commands on the keyboard. "We installed a new system last week. The terminal is hooked into a voice synthesizer." "A talking computer," said Pitt. "Yes, it can comprehend over 10,000 verbal commands, make the appropriate reply, and actually carry on a conversation. The voice sounds a little weird, sort of like Hal, the giant computer in the movie 2001, but you get used to it. We call her Hope."
"Hope?"
"Yeah, we hope she'll come up with the right answers." funny. I'll be at the main terminal desk if you need help. Just pick up the phone and dial 47. Pitt looked up at the screen. It had a bluish-gray cast. He warily picked up a microphone and spoke into it. Hope, my name is Dirk. Are you ready to conduct a search for me? God, he felt like an idiot. It was like talking to a tree and expecting a reply. Hello, Dirk, replied a vaguely female voice that sounded as if it was coming out of a harmonica. Ready when you are. Pitt took a deep breath and made the plunge. Hope, I'd like you to tell me about a ship named Cyclops. There was a 5-second pause, then the computer said, You will have to be more specific. My memory disks contain data on 5 different vessels called Cyclops. This one had treasure on board. Sorry, none show any treasure in their cargo manifest. Sorry. Pitt still couldn't believe he was conversing with a machine. If I may digress for a moment, Hope, allow me to say you're a very bright and most congenial computer. Thank you for the compliment, Dirk. In case you're interested, I can also do sound effects, imitate animals, sing, though not too well, and pronounce supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, even if I haven't been programmed to its exact definition. Would you like me to say it backwards? Pitt laughed. Some other time. Getting back to the Cyclops, the one I'm interested in probably sank in the Caribbean. That narrows it down to 2. A small steamer that ran aground in Montego Bay, Jamaica, 5 May 1968, and a U.S. Navy collier, an ore or coal transport, lost without a trace, between 5 and 10 February 1918. Raymond LeBaron wouldn't be flying around searching for a ship stranded in a busy harbor only 20 years ago, Pitt reasoned. The tale of the Navy collier came back to him. The loss was touted as one of the great mysteries of the mythical Bermuda Triangle. We'll go with the Navy collier, said Pitt. If you wish me to print out the data for you, Dirk, press the control button on your keyboard and the letters PT. Also, if you watch the screen, I can project whatever photos are available. Pitt did as he was told, and the printer began pounding away. True to her word, Hope flashed a picture of the Cyclops lying at anchor in an unnamed port. Although her hull was slender with its old-fashioned straight-up-and-down bow and graceful champagne-glass stern, her superstructure had the look of a child's erector set gone wild. A maze of derricks, spider-webbed by cables and laced by overhead supports, rose amidships like a dead forest. A long deckhouse ran along the aft part of the ship above the engine room, its roof festooned with towering twin smokestacks and several tall ventilators. Forward, the wheelhouse perched above the main deck like a vanity table on 4 legs, spotted with a single row of portholes and open beneath. 2 high masts with a crossbar protruded from a bridge that could have passed for a football goalpost. She seemed ungainly, an ugly duckling that never made it to Swan. There was also a ghostly quality about her. At first Pitt couldn't put his finger on it, and then it struck him. Oddly, no crew member was visible anywhere on her decks. It was as if she were deserted. Pitt turned from the monitor and scanned the printout of the ship's statistics. Launched 7 May 1910 by William Cramp and Sons Shipbuilders, Philadelphia. Tonnage 19,360 displaced. Length 542 feet, actually longer than the battleships of her time. Beam 65 feet. Draft 27 feet 8 inches. Speed 15 knots. 3 knots faster than the Liberty ships of World War II. Armament, 4 4-inch guns. Crew, 246. Master, G.W. Worley, Naval Auxiliary Service. Pitt noted that Worley was the Cyclops captain from the time she was placed in service until she disappeared. He sat back, his mind drifting as he studied the picture of the ship. Do you have any other photographs of her? He asked Hope. three from the same angle, one stern shot, and four of the crew. Let's have a look at the crew. The monitor went black for a moment, and soon an image of a man, standing at a ship's railing and holding a little girl's hand, came into view. Captain Worley with his daughter, explained Hope. A huge man with thinning hair, neatly trimmed mustache, and massive hands, stood in a dark suit, necktie casually askew outside the jacket, shoes highly shined, staring into a camera that froze his image 75 years ago. The little blonde girl at his side wore a knee-length jumper and a little hat, and gripped what looked to be a very rigid doll in the shape of a bottle. Real name was Johann Wickman, Hope briefed without command. He was born in Germany and illegally entered the United States when he jumped a merchant ship in San Francisco during the year 1878. How he falsified his records is not known. While commanding the Cyclops, he lived in Norfolk, Virginia with his wife and daughter. Any possibility he was working for the Germans in 1918? Nothing was ever proven. Would you like the reports from naval investigations of the tragedy? Just print them out. I'll study them later. The next photo is of Lieutenant David Forbes, the executive officer, said Hope. The camera had caught Forbes in dress uniform, standing beside what Pitt guessed to be a 1916 Cadillac touring car. He had the face of a greyhound, long, narrow nose, pale eyes whose color could not be determined from the black-and-white photograph. His face was clean-shaven, the eyebrows arched, and he had slightly protruding teeth. What sort of man was he? Asked Pitt. His naval record was unblemished until Worley put him under ship's arrest for insubordination. Reason? Captain Worley altered course from one plotted by Lieutenant Forbes and almost wrecked the ship entering Rio. When Forbes demanded to know why, Worley blew up and confined him to quarters. Was Forbes still under arrest during the last voyage? Yes. Who's next? Lieutenant John Church, second officer. The photo showed a small, almost frail-looking man in civilian clothes sitting at a table in a restaurant. His face wore the tired look of a farmer after a long day in the fields, yet his dark eyes seemed to advertise a humorous disposition. The graying hair above a large forehead was brushed back over small ears. He seems older than the others, observed Pitt. Actually only 29, said Hope. Joined the Navy when he was 16 and worked his way up through the ranks. Did he have problems with Worley? Nothing in the file. The final photograph was of two men standing at attention in a courtroom. There was no sign of apprehension in their faces. If anything, they appeared sullen and defiant. The one on the left was tall and rangy with heavily muscled arms. The other one had the size and shape of a grizzly bear. This picture was taken at the court-martial of Fireman First Class James Coker and Fireman Second Class Barney DeVoe for the murder of Fireman Third Class Oscar Stewart. All three men were stationed aboard the U.S. cruiser Pittsburgh. Coker, on the left, was sentenced to death by hanging, which was carried out in Brazil. DeVoe, on the right, was sentenced to 50 to 99 years in the naval prison at Portsmouth, New Hampshire. What's their connection with the Cyclops? Pitt inquired. The Pittsburgh was in Rio de Janeiro when the murder occurred. When Captain Worley reached port, he was instructed to transport DeVoe and four other prisoners in the Cyclops brig to the United States. And they were on board at the end? Yes. No other pictures of the crew? They are probably available in family albums and other private sources, but this is all I have in my library. Tell me about the events leading to the disappearance. Verbal or print? Can you print it out and talk at the same time? Sorry, I can only perform such functions in sequence. Which do you prefer first? Verbal. Very well, one moment while I assemble the data. Pitt was beginning to feel drowsy. It had been a long day. He used the pause to dial Jaeger and ask for a cup of coffee. How are you and Hope getting along? I'm almost beginning to think she's real, Pitt answered. Just so long as you don't start fantasizing about her non-existent body. I'm not at that stage yet. To know her is to love her. How are you doing on LeBaron? What I was afraid of, said Jaeger. He pretty much buried his past. No insight, only statistics up to the time he became the Wall Street Whiz. Anything interesting? Not really. He came from a fairly affluent family. His father owned a chain of hardware stores. I get the idea Raymond and his father didn't get along. There's no mention of his family in any newspaper biographies after he became the financial whiz. Did you find out how he made his first big bucks? That area is pretty vague. He and a partner by the name of Kronberg had a marine salvage company in the middle 1950s. Seems they scratched along for a few years and then went broke. 2 years later, Raymond launched his publication, The Prospecteur. Right. Is there any mention of where his backing came from? None, replied Jaeger. By the way, Jessie is his second wife. His first was named Hillary. She died a few years ago. Nothing on her at all. Keep hunting. Pitt hung up as Hope said, I'm ready with the data on the ill-fated final voyage of the Cyclops. Let's hear it. She put to sea from Rio de Janeiro on 16 February 1918, bound for Baltimore, Maryland. On board were her regular crew of 15 officers and 231 men, 57 men from the cruiser Pittsburgh, who were being rotated to the Norfolk Navy base for reassignment, the five prisoners including DeVoe, and the American Consul General at Rio, Alfred L. Maureen Gottschalk, who was returning to Washington. Her cargo was 11,000 tons of manganese ore. After a brief call at the port of Bahia to pick up mail, the ship made an unscheduled stop on 4 March, when she entered Carlisle Bay on the island of Barbados and dropped anchor. Here, Worley took on extra coal and provisions, which he claimed were necessary to continue the voyage to Baltimore, but was later considered to be quite excessive. After the ship was lost at sea, the American consul in Barbados reported a number of suspicious rumors regarding Worley's unusual action, strange events on board, and a possible mutiny. The last anyone saw of the Cyclops and the men on board was 4 March 1918, when she steamed away from Barbados. There was no further contact, asked Pitt. 24 hours later, a lumber freighter called the Croghan Castle reported her bow crushed by an immense freak wave. Her radio signals for assistance were answered by the Cyclops. The final words from the collier were her call number and the message, We are 50 miles due south of you and coming at full steam. Nothing else? That was it. Did the Croghan Castle give her position? Yes. It was reported as latitude 23 degrees 30 minutes north by longitude 79 degrees 21 minutes west, which put her about 20 miles southeast from a bank of shallow reefs called the Anguilla Keys. Was the Croghan Castle lost also? No, the records say she limped into Havana. Any wreckage of the Cyclops turn-up? An extensive search by the Navy found nothing. Pitt hesitated as Jaeger entered the viewing room, set a cup of coffee by the console, and silently retreated. He took a few sips and asked Hope to reshow the photo of the Cyclops. The ship materialized on the monitor's screen, and he stared at it thoughtfully. He picked up the phone, punched a number, and waited. A digital clock on the console read 11:55, but the voice that answered sounded bright and cheerful.
Dirk! Boomed Dr. Raphael O'Mara. What the hell is going down? You caught me at a good time. I just came home this morning from a dig in Costa Rica.
Find another truckload of potsherds?
Only the richest cache of pre-Columbian art discovered to date. Amazing pieces, some dating back to 300 B.C.
Too bad you can't keep them.
All my finds go to the Museo Nacional de Costa Rica.
You're a generous man, Raphael.
I don't donate them, Dirk. The governments where my finds are made preserve the artifacts as part of their national heritage. But why bore an old waterlogged relic like you? To what do I owe the pleasure of your call? I need your expertise on a piece of treasure. You know, of course, O'Mara said, his tone edged with a touch of seriousness. Treasure is an unspeakable word to a respected archaeologist. We all carry an albatross, said Pitt. Can you meet me for a drink? Now? Do you realize what time it is? I happen to know you're a night owl. Make it easy on yourself, someplace close to your house. How about the Old Angler's Inn on MacArthur Boulevard, say in half an hour? Sounds good. Can you tell me what treasure you're interested in? The one everyone dreams about. Oh, and which one is that? Tell you when I see you. Pitt hung up and gazed at the Cyclops. There was an eerie loneliness about her. He could not help wondering what secrets she took with her to a watery grave. Can I provide any further data? Asked Hope, interrupting his morbid reverie. Or do you wish to terminate? I think we can call it quits, he replied. Thank you, Hope. I wish I could give you a big kiss. I am grateful for the compliment, Dirk, but I am not physiologically capable of receiving a kiss. You're still a sweetheart in my book. Come up and use me any time. Pitt laughed. Good night, Hope. Good night, Dirk. If only she was real, he thought with a dreamy sigh.